This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Let's start today with foreign policy and national security, because lots happening over the past several days. There's the right-wing media push against National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, a unanimous U.N. Security Council vote on North Korea sanctions, and those leaked transcripts of President Trump's early calls with leaders in Mexico and Australia. So joining us to go over some of this is Admiral James Stavridis. He's the Dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. He's also author of the new book, Sea Power, The History and Geopolitics of the World's Oceans. He was also Supreme Allied Commander of NATO in Europe from 2009 to 2013. Admiral Stavridis, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you, Meghna, and on such a slow news day.
I feel like the era of slow news days is so far past us.
Yeah, I agree.
I want to start off by talking about this sort of swirl of tumult around General H.R. McMaster. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why we're so glad you could join us again is because previously on the show, you told us that that you know McMaster well, you've worked with him. Can you just remind us sort of in what capacity you know him?
I can. I've mentored him for 20 years. When I was the Supreme Allied Commander at NATO, I requested him by name. He was a young one-star general at that point, to come and be part of my team in Afghanistan, where I put him in charge of anti-corruption, which is, as you would appreciate, central to our potential success over time in Afghanistan. He has incredible integrity, and he's famous for speaking truth to power as a result of his marvelous book, Dereliction of Duty. Mm-hmm. So I've known him for two decades and remain deeply impressed with him.
Okay, so let's talk about the pressure. I'm not sure I can call it pressure, at least the outcry against him coming from right-wing media. I mean, it's everything from Sean Hannity at Fox tweeting, does H.R. McMaster need to go, to other folks, right-wing bloggers, saying that McMaster's recent firing of several members of the several folks associated with the National Security Council is undermining Donald Trump's foreign policy. I mean, what do you make of all this?
I think it's an orchestrated campaign, and one would guess that at the center of it is Steve Bannon, who came from Breitbart News, is a thought leader in that alt-right, hard right-wing movement. All the people you've mentioned have connections, significant ones, to Steve Bannon. And I think it's all part of the palace intrigue, which makes Game of Thrones look like Captain Kangaroo. So the White House is a very troubled place right now. Here's the good news, Meghna. It's the arrival of Chief of Staff General John Kelly, mm-hmm. Marine four-star, a contemporary of mine, a bit older than I am, actually, but we were young officers together 30-plus years ago. I know John extremely well, Boston native, son of a Boston police officer. If there is anyone who can bring order out of chaos and protect H.R. McMaster in that environment, it's General John Kelly. So stay tuned. I think McMaster survives at least this round. And over time, hopefully he'll remain, because he is a centrist, he's apolitical, he has the deepest respect for the Constitution and the best interests of our nation at heart.
Interesting, Admiral. I mean, so, okay, here you say he survives at least this round, but it doesn't sound like you have the same, you know, unvarnished optimism for what may come after.
Well, let's look at the six-month history, such as it is, of the Trump administration. We've seen a chief of staff fired, a national security advisor fired, a director of communications fired, a pretty hefty handful of National Security Council staff directors and senior directors fired. Track record, not so good.
But in those cases, though, if I just may jump in, I mean, in the case of Michael Flynn and Anthony Scaramucci and Reince Priebus, one could say that those all people should have all been fired, perhaps even earlier than they were. They were done so with good reason.
Well, some would say they never should have been hired, but yes. Having said that, and respecting your point, I still think here's a president who is famous for the words, you're fired. Mm-hmm. So my point on HR, and frankly on General John Kelly and anyone else in the immediate orbit of President Trump, is you are perhaps on borrowed time.
Okay.
And so that's why I think HR McMaster's is in place. I think his job has been guaranteed for the moment by General John Kelly, and I hope that General John Kelly can bring order out of chaos, and I'd say he has a better than even chance of doing so, although not much beyond better than even.
We should note, though, that that President Trump recently, in an email to the New York Times, did write, quote, "General McMaster and I are working very well together. He is a good man and very pro-Israel. I am grateful for the work he continues to do serving our country." So at least at this point in time, the president has expressed his confidence in H.R. McMaster. But Admiral Stavridis, I wanted to ask you about the effect that this is all having on the functioning of the National Security Council, for example, or maybe even McMaster's ability to do his job, because in the right wing website, the Daily Caller last week, there was a former senior official that was quoted as saying, "Everything the president wants to do, McMaster opposes." It's incredible to watch it happening right in front of your face. Absolutely stunning. I mean, certainly, McMaster himself has sort of indicated that he is aware of all this tumult surrounding him. What impact is that having on him and his ability to do his job?
Well, knowing HR quite well, he is the type of person who will put his head down and run through the fire. He will not allow distractions or a great deal of self-doubt. He is a quietly self-confident individual. He has a PhD. He knows he has the intellectual heft. He knows he has the operational experience. He's a highly decorated military officer. He will be fine. What I worry about, your point, and it's a good one, is the hiring, the firing, the constant tumult, the contradictory tweets that come out from your boss. All that makes constructing foreign policy very, very difficult. The only good news I would offer is that August typically is a bit quieter because people are taking vacations around the world. Even Vladimir Putin is sunning himself in Siberia. And therefore, I think there's a breathing space here for A, John Kelly to consolidate his control over the staff, and B, for H.R. McMaster to consolidate his control, having gotten rid of some of the really difficult people. Well, so let's talk again in September and see where it heads.
Okay, you're booked for September then. but to play devil's advocate here for a second, Admiral, I mean, again, this former official quoted in the Daily Caller, so I just want to say that, a right-wing website, says, "I don't understand why he, the president, is allowing a guy who is subverting his foreign policy at every turn to remain in place." Now, whether or not we agree with that is one thing, but when it comes to the relationship that a president can or should or has the right to have with his national security advisor, I mean, at what point, say that this tension does exist between the two of them, at what point does the president have the right to say, "You are not fulfilling my vision for U.S. foreign policy or national security, so you must go"?
At any point that he or she desires. And the national security advisor, the job H.R. McMaster is in, he directs the National Security Council and the National Security Council staff, and he serves at the pleasure of the president. And in my experience in Washington, and I've had 7 tours in Washington in the Pentagon, the president and his national security advisor, I have seen them always be very, very close. Condoleezza Rice could literally finish sentences that President Bush would start. Same thing for President Obama with both of his national security advisors. But when that gets out of sync, it's time for the national security advisor to move on. And I am encouraged, as we just talked about, by the president's tweet, and I'm encouraged by the arrival of John Kelly. But this game is not over yet, and I think we should hope, those of us who believe in a centrist, sensible foreign policy should hope that H.R. McMaster stays in place.
Have you spoken to him recently?
I spoke to him last about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and his spirits are good, and he seems to continue onward. And again, his personality is like a big, strong intellectual tank that kind of just clanks right at you. And he, I think, can withstand a lot of internal bickering and fighting, particularly if he has the support of a good, strong chief of staff.
Mm. I wonder, has the National Security Council, has the position of the National Security Advisor, has it always been a politicized one, or are we seeing a new degree of politicization around it?
I think we've seen both models. Generally, historians who look at that particular position look at someone like Brent Scowcroft, who held the position coincidentally as a three-star officer, same as H.R. McMaster is, as apolitical and at the very top of the list of national security advisors. I think someone like Condi Rice had more of a political sensibility about the way she approached things. But I think, broadly speaking, what makes a good national security advisor, number one, is a mind meld with the president. Number two is an non-parochial approach within the cabinet. In other words, balancing the equities of all the different departments of cabinet. And number three, having a long-term strategic view for the country. I think HR fulfills all those things. The challenge for him will be that mind meld with the president.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, since you promised to come back in September, let's put the tumult around H.R. McMaster to the side a bit, because I do want to talk with you, Admiral Stavridis, about what happened over the weekend regarding the United Nations Security Council and North Korea, because the Security Council voted unanimously to impose new sanctions on North Korea because of their long-range missile tests last month. The sanctions could cut about $1 billion in North Korean exports. Now, folks across the board, even those who are vocal critics of the Trump administration, are calling this a foreign policy win. But let's hear what U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, herself said. She spoke to CNN about the U.N. vote.
We hope that they realize this was the international community speaking in one voice, saying that this activity has to stop. They now have a decision to make. This was a gut punch to North Korea today. They can either now take heed and say, okay, let's start being responsible and let's see another avenue, or they can continue what they're doing and the international community will continue to respond.
Admiral Stavridis, for all the uncertainty and tumult going on within the White House, do you see this, the UN Security Council vote, as a foreign policy win for the Trump administration?
I do, and I would put it pretty squarely in the win column for Ambassador Nikki Haley, who I think from square zero has been the top appointment that the president has made. And I'm pleasantly surprised. She's not a woman with great international experience. She's governor of South Carolina. I don't think she's traveled extensively. I think she's done remarkably good work at the United Nations, particularly given she does not get a lot of, shall we say, inherent support from the Trump administration, many of the figures in it who are scornful of the United Nations. But right from day one, she has been criticizing Russia. She's been bringing North Korea to the council. She's been criticizing Iran appropriately. She's, I think, done a very good job, and I give her a great deal of credit. The second win here is that the Trump administration, evidently, is now beginning to realize that we don't have to have a unilateral foreign policy, that we can win through our alliances and through international organizations like the United Nations. So, yes, I think it's a win. However, it's not a panacea. It's not going to immediately solve the problem. And North Korea has been sanctioned before. These are stronger sanctions. Let's see where it goes.
Well, I mean, the North Koreans themselves immediately denounced it, right?
Right.
I mean, they said, quote, "We denounce and totally reject the UN Security Council resolution in our country, which the U.S. and hostile forces have fabricated." I mean, so but walk me through this for a quick second. If the UN has sanctioned North Korea before and it hasn't been all that effective, which it hadn't because the missile program continued, how effective is this likely to be?
I think it's not likely to be immediately effective, and it will only be effective, Magna, if China steps up. China is very content to talk the talk of sanctions, but we have not seen them walk the walk. We have not seen them use the fact that they control 90% of North Korea's import-export markets to actually take the measure of Kim Jong-un. All roads to Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea, lead through Beijing. Mm. We've got to see China step up, and I am most encouraged about this vote because China supported it. Now we've got to hold China's feet to the fire to actually take control and help us enforce those sanctions.
Well, that's Admiral James Stavridis. He's dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. He's also former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO in Europe and author of Sea Power, The History and Geopolitics of the World's Oceans. Admiral Stavridis, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure, Magna. Next time. Bye-bye.
We'll be back. I'm Magna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.